Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area. And we now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. And I just want to thank everyone so much for their wonderful support. During the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time today, I'll be interviewing my good friend Simon Parks live from England. He's an amazing ET contact, and I know you'll really enjoy his interview. We've been trying to reach him now for several minutes. I hope that he comes on. If not, then during our second hour from 3 to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing some wonderful people who will be part of my Galactic Wisdom Conference, which will be held next month in Olympia, Washington, just south of Seattle, on April 12th, 13th, and 14th. I'll be interviewing Angela Light, a wonderful medium and healer, Dr. Todd Humphrey, a fantastic naturopathic medical doctor, Billy and Woodard and Zora of the Hollow Earth, and Eric Rains, as well as Michiko Hayashi. Eric Rains is an incredibly talented energy healer who removes negative implants, and who will all be speaking at my fifth annual Galactic Wisdom Conference. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone so much for their support for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. The dates of the conference, my conference coming up are April 12th, 13th, and 14th, which is just a week from today it starts. I'd also like to really thank Corey and Saul in Kirkland for their wonderful support, as well as my wonderful friends Marion Elias in Costa Rica, Bradley and Gemma in London, England, Jan Eric and Emma Louise in Norway, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, as well as Sue in Ontario, Canada. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show. We're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services in over 90 countries with over 250,000 listeners. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website, providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance, who I know have been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course, Eric at KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. Also, my friend Carol had a car accident recently, and if you could please send lots of love, light, and positive energy to her, that would be really appreciated. Also, Darren, his mother's in the hospital, and please send lots of love and light to her mother, Carolyn, as well. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. You can also call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or toll-free at 1-888-879-8339. My conference will be held in about a week from today on April 12th, 13th, and 14th here in Olympia, Washington, with some of the world's most famous healers and UFO people. The cost is just $125 for the entire conference, or $75 a day. And the first day, actually on Friday, April 12th, is free. And so if you'd like to come down on Friday, would love to meet you, and you can meet all of our speakers and vendors. This will be my fifth annual conference. The address will be at 9101 Stillicum Road, Southeast in Olympia. Our website is www.galacticwisdomconference.com, and I hope you can come. Also, on April 11th, Thursday, just before the conference, we'll be having a prayer for meditation and world peace at the Artesian Springs in downtown Olympia with French Hollywood film director Emmanuel Eiter and Michiko Hayashi. Afterwards, everyone's invited to a meet and greet potluck. For more information, please go to our website. Please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. The event's free, and I hope you can come. After the conference, I'll be taking a small group of people to visit sacred sites and meet with Hopi elders in Arizona from April 21st to April 28, 2019. We'll meet in Sedona at the Black Bear Diner on Sunday, April 21st, and then travel north to the Hopi. The cost is just $200 per person, with half the proceeds going to the Hopi for clean water, and the other half of the proceeds going to the nonprofit children's charity, the Emoto Peace Project, a nonprofit organization that teaches children love and gratitude around the world. If you'd like to come, please send an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me at 509-750-9793. And I know that if we all work together, we can create a much better and happier world. We're still trying to get a hold of Simon, so I'd love to tell you some wonderful psychic and spiritual fairs that are coming up. I'm sorry, what, Eric? He's on the call? Oh, good. Okay, good. Very quickly, this weekend on Sunday, April 7th from 8 to 9 p.m., I'll be giving a presentation, an update from my book, Messages from the Masters, with new messages from Professor Albert Einstein, John F. Kennedy, and Nostradamus at the Gateway Portal at 10401 Venice Boulevard, Suite 202 in Los Angeles. The famous French psychic Sarah Jean Sibley will be joining me, and afterwards, Michiko Hayashi will be giving a presentation on messages from water from Dr. Masaru Emoto. The cost is just $10 per person, and I hope you can come. For more information, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Finally, I'll be returning to Mount Shasta again from July 2nd to July 8th, 2019, and again from September 5th to 11th, 2019. Mount Shasta is a very special and magical place where miracle healings occur from the Talosians and the beautiful people of Telos and the Hollow Earth. We always also see many Sasquatch and UFOs flying in and around Mount Shasta. And the last time we were there, we were able to contact a UFO, and they did a dance for us across the skies. And Adama, the high priest of Telos, also healed the vision in my right eye, restoring it, the vision in my eye from 20/50 blurry farsighted vision to perfect crystal clear 20/10 vision in both eyes. If you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793. And with that, I think I've talked enough, and I'd like to bring my good friend Simon Parks on from England now. Simon, how are you doing today?
Hello, Ted. I'm fine. I think you got to give your voice a rest, you know.
Well, I think I will after the show. I'll stop talking after 4 o'clock.
Very good idea. No, I'm fine, Ted. All's well here. Thank you for asking.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, are you feeling better, by the way? I know that you you had a tooth problem here a few weeks ago, and I asked everyone to send lots of love and light to you to help you feel better. So
thank you. It did work. I'm much better now, so I'm very, very grateful. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time listening to Simon's interview, he's a lifelong experiencer of aliens, shadow people, elementals, and UFOs. These include mantis beings, Draconis reptilian, feline small and tall gray creatures, crystalline beings, and other creatures that simply can't be identified. Simon was elected office, elected politician, and served full term of office. And both of his parents worked for British and American intelligence services. And so he's got a fascinating background, and I always enjoy talking to Simon. He's got a heart of gold, and his interest is in truly helping humanity. His website is www.simonparks, that's spelled S-I-M-O-N-P-A-R-K-E-S, .wix.com. And you can look up all his wonderful things on the internet there. Well, Simon, you had lots of interesting things on your website, and there's so much going on. My goodness. What areas would you like to go to? But I've also got a lot of questions from listeners too, so we can head the program any way you like today.
Oh, thanks, Ted. It's simonparks.org.
Oh, .org. Okay. Okay, good.
I think you've got an old one there, Ted.
Okay.
As you know, you have an American audience. Let's start off with something rather fun.
Okay.
I had a friend who visited from the US, and they were over for a number of meetings in London, and then very kindly said that they would want to come and visit me before going back. And this person had had a interview with President Trump and had a conversation with him on Air Force One. Mm-hmm. And whenever you are with the president, apparently, whenever you're with the president in Air Force One, you're given one of these special Air Force One caps. Mm-hmm. And this person was given it, and they said, "I've got this friend in Great Britain, in England. Could I have a cap for him, please?" And they said, "Seeing as it's you, we will." So I'm the very proud owner. It's non-political because it's the office of the president. It's, you know, whoever is the president has Air Force One. So whoever, these caps are worn by all of the crew, whether they're the pilot, the co-pilot, or the staff, and anyone who visits the president in Air Force One. So I have, I've actually got an Air Force One cap, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And I've got the, you're going to know more about this than I do, but the pins that the senators and the Congress men and women wear, which is the seal of the United States seal. So I've got those. I've also got been given some CIA tie pins and FBI pins and a number of intelligence patches. So the person said to me, "You are loved in America." So I thought, well, that was really lovely for them to say that. I've got my little gifts now. I'm treasuring them. So that was nice that somebody who'd had a meeting with the president wanted to come and have a chat with me about a few things, and we could share a few ideas, and then off they go back to the US. So that was rather exciting, and I wanted to share that with you, Ted.
Oh, how fun! How fun! Do the pins actually say FBI on them or CIA? And are the pins made in China?
This is really interesting you say that, because can you believe it? The Air Force One caps are made in China, and it just doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. It's a really lovely cap. It's brilliant, and inside it says, and there's a heart, and it says something like "I love DC," which is hidden inside. You don't even see that. But yes, that's made in China. No, the others don't say made in China. Thank goodness.
But, yeah. I wonder what President Trump's reaction would be if you pointed that out to him.
But, I bet you he doesn't even know.
No.
I think if he did know, he would blow a fuse and insist that they were immediately made in America. In fact, I might tell the person. Oh, the person who came to London for a number of meetings and then detoured to see me last weekend has decided they also want to see me again. So this person is visiting me again before they go back to America.
Oh.
So I have a second visit with them. And I think I will just say, do you think you would just let somebody know that? Because I bet you nobody knows. Well, somebody knows, Ted, but the guy at the top doesn't know. So that'll be very interesting. And if there's a change and it goes to a new manufacturer and it's made in the US, I'll tell you.
Okay, that'll be great. That'll be great. Would you mind? You don't have to share, of course. What he said, but if you would like to share, that would be wonderful. Anything that you feel comfortable in sharing?
There's only one thing that I can share, which I have already did on my podcast today, which hasn't gone out yet. It's recorded today and go out tomorrow. But your guys will get this first.
Okay.
I've been doing a lot on 5G in terms of the concerns we have, and put out an interview with a guy called Sasha Stone, and I attached the video that he'd done. A lot of that is fixed in America, and you might have seen that. You might want to talk about that. But basically, having had a number of discussions with people, I am less concerned about 5G for the United States of America than I am anywhere else. In other words, I actually think that 5G is not going to be allowed to have the detrimental effect in America that it is elsewhere. So the only thing I can share with you from some of these conversations is that certain people are very aware of the dangers of 5G in the US and are actively doing something about it. So I'm more concerned for the rest of the world. 5G.
Interesting. I did a lot of research on 5G during the past week in preparation. Actually, I was working on 5G, and just because I was interested and wanted to learn as much as I can about it. And it's the frequency and the intensity of the electromagnetic radiation from the cell towers, which affects people's health and the environment as well. So, if President Trump realizes that the 5G cell towers are detrimental to people's health and the environment, that he might find a way to lessen the effects somehow, maybe turn down the intensity of electromagnetic radiation. I don't know, but that's just an idea.
Well, let me give you and the audience some things that are very concerning about Great Britain.
Okay.
A number of cities in Great Britain have trialed 5G, switched on for a period of days or weeks. And one city is Bristol, so that's Bristol in the southwest of England.
Sure.
And I'm really, really sad to say that during the trial period in one university, 15 students committed suicide,
Oh, you're kidding.
which is just off the scale.
Wow.
When we look at these suicides, they were all during the trial period of this 5G in their city. The video that I've put out, it's not my video, I've attached it to my interview video, really strongly ask all of your audience, please, to find 1 hour to watch it, because a lot of it is in filmed in America, and I was I'm fairly up with stuff, but I have to tell you, Ted, I was absolutely shocked when the cameras were in on one of these congressional hearings, and there were doctors and scientists testifying, giving evidence against 5G, and I don't know if they were congressmen or senators. But they actually are recorded as saying, "Well, actually, I don't know anything about this. I haven't a clue. I just get my advice from X, Y, or Z." And the staggering lack of knowledge from these lawmakers, and that's why these things have got through, because lawmakers are not technically expert. So that comes out in the video, and it's well worth watching.
If you could send me the link, I'll be happy to post it on, have it posted to my website, Simon. I actually,
I'll get that organized for you. It's very well worthwhile watching. It really is.
okay, that's great. That's great. I know there are groups here in Washington State near Seattle who've also been fighting a new 5G tower by Verizon. There's a group called nonprofit called People for Safe Technology in Yelm, Washington. They filed an appeal with the county on this on a 5G cell tower, and it's incredible. They've been fighting it now for, I believe, about 4 years, Simon. They've spent over $30,000 fighting it. They're not giving up. And all the comments that they had at a hearing back last year, 494 pages of public comments against the cell tower and the environmental health effects were thrown out by the local Thurston County Planning Department. So they're now in a court case with that now. But I hope people will wake up, because this is a serious issue. And as you've mentioned, so.
It is, Ted. The video is well worth watching, because it explains that in America, it is illegal. You cannot campaign against a cell tower either on health grounds or environmental grounds. So it's a shame we couldn't advise them, because that was not the right road to go down. You are not allowed. You can't win a court case in America if you campaign against the detrimental effect on the health or the environmental impact. That doesn't work. If they've changed the law, you can't do it. Now, what is interesting, France have banned, that's the French, is a big country, bigger than Britain. France have banned all Wi-Fi from their creches, their kindergartens. And the first city in Europe, Brussels, it's a city in Europe, has banned 5G.
I saw that on your website. That's
Yeah,
amazing and good
that's
for them.
really important, because there are two questions that come from this. What do they know that other lawmakers don't know? That's the first question. The second question is, how have they been allowed to do that? Because I'm sure there are a number of lawmakers that want to ban this, and they've been told, absolutely, you're not allowed to. But they somehow have got through with that. So there's a lot of information out there, And it's perhaps one of the biggest things we're facing. So that was one aspect that I've been concentrating on.
Interesting, interesting. I did see that post and I did read the website, and Céline Fermont is her name. She's the Minister of Environment for Brussels. She says, quote, "I cannot welcome such 5G technology if the radiation standards, which must protect citizens, are not respected." The people, she spoke and said, "The people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. We cannot leave anything to doubt." So she's banned 5G from the city of Brussels now in Belgium and Europe.
Good for her. And in Canada, one of the engineers who was tasked with, you know, putting the cell towers up, mm-hmm. And there's a little clip of this. Mm-hmm. He was one of the engineers doing it, and he suddenly, because of his technical background, realized what 5G was, right. And tried to campaign against it. Was sacked from his job, not surprising really. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get anyone to listen to him, so he broke. This is all true. He broke into an army barracks, stole a tank, and then smashed down 5 of the towers that he'd put up.
What? So
literally, yes.
Tank
over 5 of the towers that he himself had put up when he was working for the utility company. And there is a clip of that. The local Canadian television managed to get out there and film some of the towers he was knocking down. So the point is, Ted, there is a wealth of evidence, and you know, lots of people know the truth about this, but there's so much money involved that they're just keeping their mouth shut. But I think what's going to happen is the dam is going to burst. I mean, if Brussels have banned it, then every other city has got to ask itself why. So that's really fascinating. So I don't want to hold up the show anymore with that,
but
the audience get a chance to look at that, because I think the fight back is starting, to be honest. It's very good news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One quick footnote on that. The president of the Los Angeles County Firefighters Union, Local 1014 in Los Angeles, opposes cell towers because a lot of their members, where they've been working at various fire stations, Simon, have suffered severe neurological and genetic damage from a 5G cell tower right next to the station. So
I didn't know that. That's interesting, Ted. That's a good bit of news. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. And I think as more people are harmed by this technology, then it's people are going to speak out, and they're going to wake up. You know, I'm personally, Simon, I'm not against technology. I'm just against technology that harms people. That's all. And the environment. So, well, let's go on. We could talk easily for the rest of the hour on cell towers, but I have a lot of other topics I'd love to topic to continue with. You had a post on April 2nd on Planet X.
Yep.
And what is that? You said that Planet X will make a return to our location at some point in 2023 or 2024. You don't think it'll impact the Earth. It could fly by and cause some damage from seawater. And a loss of communications is pretty much guaranteed. Do you have an update on that? A lot of people have been asking about that.
Right. A mistake I made was to put that out on the 1st of April, because so many people thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh, that's right. They would, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And of course, I just don't think like that. I know April the 1st is April Fool's Day, but I just don't think like that. And I get information that I must put it out. I don't sit on it. That's what the elite do. The elite hold information back from people. So in hindsight, I should have put it out on the 2nd of April officially. But basically, I have never denied Planet X. I have always denied that it would strike the Earth. About 3 or 4 years ago, there was a great upswing in posts on the internet that Planet X had come back and it was going to hit us in about 2015 or 2016, and it was the end of the world, etc., etc., doom and gloom. Now, I'd always said, no, that's not the case. And I had reminded people that the Vatican had a couple of telescopes, and one of them was designed specifically to pick up this Planet X. Mm-hmm. Now, this object, I have been told, has entered the far reaches of the solar system. And the reason they know that is not because they are seeing it with an optical telescope, but they are measuring the gravitational effect on light and on other planetary bodies in the solar system are beginning to be affected. And they are drawing the conclusion that the only thing that could affect them that has this huge mass of a gravitational field is the return of Planet X. Now, based on they're looking at how it's traveled over the last few months,
mm-hmm.
I've been told, you know, 2023, 2024,
mm-hmm.
probably come within 1.5 miles, so it won't strike the Earth. But mm-hmm. what will happen is the debris trail, which is made up of bits of rock and ice, will probably get showered with that. The gravitational pull of the planet will cause some flooding. It's not mm-hmm. the end of the world, but there will be some flooding. Now, there's always a very confusion, Ted, about the poles shifting. And unfortunately, right. most people imagine that physically, geographically, the planet's going to turn on its axis and the poles are going to swap over. That's not what's going to happen. What I believe will happen is that the magnetic poles will switch. So what is presently north will become south, and what is presently south will become north. Now, there has happened on the Earth before, about 700,000 right. years ago.
Right.
They know that because they've been able to look at volcanic ash, and they've seen that. The only thing that's going to struggle are insects and birds, which use the magnetic poles, but they will come back to look it up. Sure. That sounded like a clock striking.
It did.
Okay. So, well, are you doing your radio show from a clock repair shop? Yeah, you are a wonderful man, Ted. You'll do your show top of mountains, under basements, and in repair workshops. I think that's it. So basically, what we've got is a situation where it is not doom and gloom. That's okay. important to get that across.
Well, thanks so much for telling us that. It's interesting to think that South America could become North America and North America could become South America if there was a pole shift. But I've been told by my galactic friends many years ago that there wouldn't be a pole shift. So maybe they've got the technology and the help we need to keep the Earth pretty much stable during this time.
No, Ted, that's the point. It's not a pole shift like that. That's not the pole shift I'm talking about.
Okay.
Pole shift I'm talking about is what we call the magnetic poles shifting.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Magnetic poles. At the moment, if you stand in Times Square with your geographical compass, the one with the needle that moves, the old-fashioned one,
mm-hmm.
or a digital one, it shows north and it gives in degrees, like mm-hmm. north 32 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, at the moment, north points in a certain direction. If Planet X comes as we think it will do, it just flips. So what? Where at the moment where the needle is pointing to north, it would mm-hmm. point to south.
Oh, so interesting.
No geographical movement at all. No Earth movements at all. Just the magnetic poles flipping.
Wow. Interesting.
So no loss of life at all. No loss of life. Just magnetic flip.
If I may ask some further questions quickly on that, is Planet X Nibiru, which is, or a different one, or is this is the planet of the Anunnaki, and does it have an elliptical orbit from what you know of 3,600 years through the solar system?
That's what do you guys say, the $1 million question, or perhaps they used to say $1 million doesn't buy you much these days. Does it? But I think that it may not necessarily be the same object.
Uh-huh.
The Vatican have their telescope specifically defined this planet.
Right.
And potentially, I mean, we don't know enough yet, literally, about what all we know is an object has entered our solar system that is so huge mm-hmm. that it is exerting a magnetic and gravitational effect. Now, it's not a spaceship, that's for sure, mm-hmm. because it's mm-hmm. far too big and the density of it's too huge.
Mm-hmm.
It could well be Planet X as Planet X, or it could well be Nibiru. There was always some confusion whether we were dealing with one object in our ancient history or two.
Huh. I'm just going to
say that the jury's out on that one at the moment, but certainly we're expecting some object, to make a flyby around 2023, 2024.
Uh huh. Wow. I know that friends of mine have looked at the sun, and they've actually seen another planet next to it, like it's coming in, and that could be related. I don't know. I haven't seen it myself, but that's what they told me. So,
I've seen pictures, and again, the jury's out. I think that if this object was as close as we would like it to be in terms of evidence, I think so many amateur astronomers would have picked it up. You see, the official boys, they'll lie. So we can't rely on them. What we can rely on are all the individual little clubs and groups and guys and women who have a telescope in their backyard. And they're the ones that are going to inundate the radio stations. They're the ones that are going to inundate the TV stations to the point that it can't be hushed up anymore. Now, when that starts happening, we know we've got the real deal. But at the moment, what I and others are relying on is a very rarefied channel of information, which we can't verify. I can't go out into my yard and look up and say, oh, yes, that's right. But I've had two separate feeds of information who are not related to each other, both giving me this information, and that's why I've gone public with it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, thanks so much for sharing that, Simon. And it'll be interesting to hear your updates in the future.
Sure.
You had another post on Saturday, March 30th, about the migrant flux into the United States from the Mexican border. Figures from March show nearly 100,000 tried to get in. President Trump has proposed closing the border unless the Mexican government does more to stop the surge of people coming in to the United States. There's a couple of questions related to that too, but I'll let you, if you can give us an update on that, it would be great.
The Mexicans could do more. The problem is that Mexico is not a rich country. It's not. It's an impoverished country. It's also got to play a very careful political game because it's got the United States as its neighbor. But the politics that are being played behind this are quite in depth. This relates to the meeting I had, and I'm in a bit of a difficult position because I can't be as open with you as I'd like to be. So
That's
I'm going to,
okay. That's all
yeah,
right. Just
I'll do my best.
okay.
Well, it's not going to call it a wall anymore. We're going to call it a fence.
Okay.
There is a real need to protect an area. All I can say is there's a real need to protect an area, and the fence is not just about keeping out migrants. There is another reason for the fence, which is far more justifiable, actually. Far, when this all breaks, as it will do in maybe 6 months' time or a year's time, then I think people will say, oh, now I understand why. That was what President Trump wanted.
Sure.
So what I'm saying to you is that there is an issue with security, and it is important that the border is protected because something special could well be happening there at some point.
Right.
And therefore, it is vital for the United States, literally, that this border is there. So I'm not saying that migrants are the issue. What I'm saying is the fact that anybody could easily get over the border unopposed could in the future be very detrimental to the US. So Mexico has got to do more to regulate what it's up to, and I think you'll find that they will do.
Sure, absolutely. There's a book out called Conversations with Nostradamus by Dolores Cannon, which was published, a three-volume set that was published in 1986, 87, and 88. And in those books, Simon, Nostradamus talks about the influx of people coming into the United States from the southern border. And he predicted that back in 19, I think it was 87 or 88. So it's interesting to if you do get a copy of that book, to read the book, because many of the things that he talked about are coming through. He also talked about World War III and Armageddon, but that's not happening because most of us have made the right choices to make the world a better place. So we're not going to have a World War III or Armageddon. But his prophecy about an influx of people coming from the southern border has turned out to be true.
It is amazing. I mean, I think he was writing, what, 500 years ago, wasn't he? Something like that, 400.
Yeah, amazing.
And I think what's happened is that all I can add to this is that his early predictions came true because human consciousness had not been strong enough to change the timeline. But the advanced predictions that he looked at have not come true simply because human consciousness has decided it didn't want the negative path. But when Nostradamus was doing his predictions, he was obviously working them from the point that he and humanity were at. So in other words, he got the Second World War right. I mean, most people don't know that Nostradamus was only 1 year out for the Second World War. So he wrote this something like 450 years before the Second World War.
Right.
He was only 1 year out in the prediction. And we all know the name Adolf Hitler.
Sure.
He wrote the name Histler.
That's right.
Now, to be able to do that 450 years before the man actually was here, it should shatter anybody's belief that the world is just purely a black and white 3D world, and that's all there is to it. The very fact that we have absolute proof that somebody had the capability to send his mind forward or have something come in and talk to him proves that the science that we are being fed is all BS.
That's right. And, you know, in one of those books from Dolores Cannon, he mentions us talking and you being on my show today. Just kidding. But
you mustn't do that, Ted, because I believe what you tell me.
Sorry. Sorry.
Well, there you go, then. You're very naughty to me.
Sorry, Simon. But Nostradamus is an amazing fellow. I talk to him now. And he says that the timeline has changed because we've made the better choices for the future.
That's good.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good things to come in the future. One last thing about the flux of immigrants coming into the United States. People don't talk about this very much, but I think it's a factor. In the 1990s, Monsanto went into the Mexican agricultural economy and introduced GMO corn. Of course, corn was a big staple and is a big staple of the Mexican economy and the farm. But most of the farms back then were not big farms. They weren't like the petrochemical farms that we have here in the United States, and they didn't use any GMO corn. All the corn they use was primarily just organic corn. But that was transformed in the mid to late 90s with GMO corn. And with that mechanization of agriculture in Mexico, I'm told by friends who live there that many family farms and organic farms, small farms, were all wiped out. And they increasingly became consolidated like they are here in the United States. And as a result, many, many people lost their jobs. And there was a huge unemployment in Mexico in the agricultural sector. And if you're living in Mexico and looking for work, you might consider coming north to the United States to find a better life. So I can understand that. But people don't talk about the effect of Monsanto on the Mexican economy and with the migrants coming in.
Well, the interesting thing is that there's not a lot of difference. People would, you know, shout me down, but there isn't a lot of difference between that and the old communist Russia, because Stalin, who was the leader of Russia for a long period of time, he sort of nationalized, or he took control and created, they were all farms in Russia, each run by a little family or a little group of people. And he just basically came in and just took them all into what he called a collective. It's a very communist word, a collective. And the result of that was a total collapse of the economy, because what happened was no competition. Because if you just come in and you just take it all so that one company or one man is owning 75%, three quarters of the output, well, there is no competition, and therefore that organization can start to extort, can start to cause aggravation. So in a strange way, what happened to a communist Russia, you begin to see happening, where power is dissolving into the hands of just a very few people who are totally isolated from the ordinary man and woman on the sidewalk.
Well, I have to tell you just a quick footnote on that. I know from Russian history, the early 1920s, when Vladimir Lenin was the premier of Russia, he collectivized farms too, but it was a failure under his administration. So then he allowed what's called the NEP, or New Economic Program, where he allowed people to raise produce and sell them at markets throughout Russia on these small family plots and small family farms. And it was a huge success. And it was a big success until Stalin came in and recollectivized everything. So it's an interesting, very interesting history of what happened there. Well, great. I have some emails too, or would you like to talk about anything else? Simon, I know you had some other postings and I've got...
Let's have some questions because otherwise we miss out.
Okay. This is Nathan. Nathan from the United Kingdom. He has a question for you. He writes, if you have a father and son and the father dies of old age, then 40 years later, the son dies of old age. This sounds like a test question. Was the father waiting in the spirit world for 40 years for the son to arrive? Or, because there's no time in the spirit world, does it only seem like a second has passed? Or is it because the past, present, and future are one? And is the son already waiting for the dad? I'm trying to get my head around this and was wondering what your thoughts are. Thank you for your time.
Fine. It's not as difficult as the question makes it difficult, and I don't mean to be rude, because from where we look at it, these are the way we ask our questions, because we only have one aspect. It's if you're living in an apartment with two rooms, but you only live in one room, you have to create your life from one room. But somebody who has two rooms sees life completely differently. So the time and space in this dimension, the third dimension, is remarkably different. Mm-hmm. If you were to go from the fifth to the ninth dimension, the shock or the change would be less than going from the third to the fourth. You see, what we're missing here is time. Our concept of time is linear, but when you go into the fourth and higher dimensions, the time is different, but they're all the same. It's a figure of eight or an elliptical. It means that time and space bend. So the answer to your question is that 40 years on this planet, and I can't be exact, but if I said to you it was probably 3 seconds,
right,
you're probably about right. So in other words, that the concept of time here in the third dimension, it does not work in any other dimension higher, and vice versa. So for instance, somebody say an alien spacecraft crashes, right, and let's just say it crashes on the 1st of June 1950. Let's just give an arbitrary date, and you go right through 50-60 years, and those creatures from that spaceship wonder why no one's come to collect them. The fact is that they've only just been discovered as missing after 50-60 years of our time.
Right.
Because the time doesn't work in the same way. So we can't try to equate or understand that concept until we are there ourselves. So the answer is that 40 years on this planet and then you go to another dimension is just nothing.
That's an interesting point, because I've read accounts of, and actually there was a group of people that came with me to my visit to Mount Shasta in September of 2016. And there were a group of Koreans who they prayed and meditated, and they actually went in physically into Telos and also visited Shambhala as well. They were gone, Simon, for maybe 7 or 8 hours.
Wow.
But to them, it was only minutes in this higher fifth dimension.
Yes.
And they would have stayed longer, but their children were not used to it, and they wanted to come back, so they came back. And I'll never forget them wandering around dazed a bit. They were sort of a little bit dazed, a little confused, walking around at this entrance to Mount Shasta where we picked them up. And it was pretty incredible. The interviews are on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com for September 2016. You can listen to my interviews with them. But that was an example of how time in the higher dimensions passes maybe minutes. And here it could be many hours or days or even years for that matter.
Yes. And that's very interesting to hear that. And that sounds absolutely genuine. Because time and time again, real, genuine people who write books or they explain their experiences, and we use the word missing time. It's usually about alien abductions. But when a person is taken from this world And people don't really understand this, but they're not just taken from this world somewhere else. They're taken to another dimension. And sure. This is what missing time is about. So, you know, your watch might recognize you've been gone an hour, but you feel you've gone 4 hours, or the reverse is true. Because if you leave this dimension, time has no hold on you. So what you've described is exactly the same as somebody saying, I've had a missing time experience. My watch recognizes I've been only 20 minutes, but I feel as if I've been 10 hours. Or my watch says I've been gone 10 hours, but I feel I've only been 20 minutes. And this is something that we cannot get our heads around, because we've not able to experience it in the physical.
Sure, right. That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for explaining that, Simon. Always interesting to talk to you. Have another question. This is from Maureen in Kansas. She said that, are you, quote, in the know about the Black Ops operations helicopter landing in downtown Los Angeles, California? She said this was not a drill, and they landed on Wilshire Boulevard, which is a very busy intersection. They were dressed in hazmat suits, and it was on YouTube. I've seen it, but there's no explanation for it. Anything you might have on that?
I've been made aware of it, but all I can say is that you should expect more of these.
Okay.
And what makes it so unusual is they are in, you know, populous areas. We don't usually expect that.
Right.
And sometimes, and I haven't got the answer for, but I can give you a series of answers. It could be one of them. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, something or someone gets loose. They are looking at, it would be very interesting to know if there's a subway underneath there. Many of these things that have occurred are because there's been a subway and they've been very interested in that. Mm-hmm. And the other point is, it was a demonstration to someone in an office block or a corporation that has offices along those lines, who then all looked out of the window and saw this happening. So it's one of those three. I don't know the answer for your one, but it's not the only place it's occurred, and it's going to happen again in different places.
Okay. Okay, good. That's an excellent answer. I have another question from a light worker in Oregon. Many of us financially struggle to earn a living as we try to make the world a better place. Will our lives get easier as the vibrations rise on the planet and the planet shifts into the higher dimensions from the third, going away from the third dimension?
This is the question that cuts to the fundamentality of why we're here. Right. Let's look at some people who've made it. Let's talk about the Pleiadians. The Pleiadians sit in the middle of the fifth dimension. How do we think they got there? Did they get there because they became technologically superior? Did they get there because some other alien force came and gave them a hand? No. They got there because they looked at themselves. They understood who they were in relation to the life around them. They understood their position, and they made a conscious choice as to where they wanted to go spiritually. So it's very hard to move up the ladder. It's very easy to come down. Anybody who is alive on this earth at this time has chosen to be here at A, the most dangerous time, be the most exciting time. And those who have volunteered, no matter what it is, to take the message out and to do this work, have chosen this course because they can't do anything else. You couldn't do anything else. You wouldn't want to do anything else. You are driven to do this. And it doesn't matter what it is you're doing. If you are doing something to educate or to be spiritual or to model or show, you as an individual and we as a group are attempting to push the envelope so that people who have not yet woken up are faced with a choice. And it's their choice whether they hear the message and act on it, or hear the message and decide they don't want to act on it. So mm-hmm. the answer about will our lives get easier, I think that's not the right way to look at it. And I'm not okay. I'm not hiding from your question. It's a very good question. Mm-hmm. We are in a very difficult 3D world, which is all about money. Mm-hmm. And without money, the act of living, particularly in the United States of America and Canada, but the US, is incredibly difficult. If you don't right. have a resource called money, you are in trouble. Right. And often we say, I want my life to be easier, meaning I don't want to have to struggle financially. But you might be struggling financially, but do you have two arms and two legs and two eyes? Then, you know, look at people who are physically disabled or mentally disabled who are worse sure. off than you. So what I want people to understand is that the only way to evolve is to go through the test. If you have $1 million and your life is fantastic, you are not actually challenging yourself. You're not being
That's
made.
True.
So we are doing this, but your answer is yes. Uh-huh. It's going to get easier, not because somebody is going to come and give you $1 million. It's going to get easier because the control systems are going to collapse. And we are going to live in a world where the values are based on what we believe in. And it's not about how much money you've got. It's going to be how much good you've done for the world. So keep at it. Don't lose the faith. Just keep soldiering away. And in the end, we will win.
Great. Great, Simon. Thank you so much for saying that. We've got a couple minutes left. A quick question from another listener in California. Chemtrails, when are they going to stop? And will President Trump try to stop them or stop them?
Right. Very good question. The difficulty we have is that from a security aspect, there is an element to chemtrails which the American military want. Hmm. That's not the deliberate poisoning of people. The military had a take in chemtrails simply because when you dump trillions of tons of aluminum into the atmosphere, it covers the world in a radar blanket, basically. And if you have a phased array type radar antenna, it allows you to detect alien spacecraft.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's the aspect. Now, what we've got, though, we've got some very, very negative people who have also been on the back of that, doing the poisoning and the nasty stuff. But what I would mm-hmm. say that's not really coming out into the fore, it's not really widely known, and perhaps if I'm not the first to say it, I'm going to be one of the first. We have all been breathing in these tiny particulates of aluminum. When 5G activates, we will shine, we will be illuminated, because we have so much aluminum that we have taken on, that under the 5G, we will be detectable. So it will be possible to know where every human being is. Every human being can be given a number, mm-hmm. and they'll say, well, you know, human being 460 million, and they'll, the computer will say who that person is, and they'll know when you go to the mall. They'll know when you go on the sidewalk. In other words, there is the possibility that the 5G, which is not just a two-way device, we become like an RFID chip. Because of the aluminum in our body, we begin to give a signal off when struck by a phased array. Now, each piece of aluminum is like an RFID chip,
sure.
and acts with your own body, and therefore one of the aspects of 5G is to have a database in real time to know where everybody is. And that was another ploy. And when you look over the last 25 years, you yes. can see that this isn't just some chance operation. What they've done is they've said, well, in 10 years' time, we'll have this technology. In 20 years' time, we'll have this technology. So we'll work up and assume that by the time we reach this point, we'll have the next bit of technology to take it.
Take it further. We've got about 20 seconds left, my friend. You're welcome to stay over for a few minutes to the first of my next hour if you like to finish your thought. Yeah. Or Or I wish you good night. I know it's late there, but you're welcome to stay over a few minutes if you like.
It's really kind. I'm going to go to bed because it's late here.
Okay.
But listen, it's always great to speak to you. I love America. I love the American people. Okay. And I look forward to coming back on your show soon.
Okay. All right, Simon. Have a wonderful evening. And thank you so much again for coming on today. Please stay tuned, friends, for our next hour. Thank you so much, Simon. Good night.